Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we are focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Drive On podcast. Today, my guest is Jason Pike. Jason is a decorated combat veteran with multiple deployments who served 31 years in the U.S. Army, starting off as a private and working his way up through the ranks to the rank of lieutenant colonel. He's also the author of the book, A Soldier Against All Odds, which we'll get into in just a minute. But first, welcome to the show, Jason. I'm glad to have you here.
Hey, I'm very honored to be on the show. I really am. And so thank you for giving me the opportunity. I really did.
Oh, for sure. And I'm, as we mentioned before the recording started, I'm always honored to have people come on the show sharing their stories and just pulling back the curtain on a bit of their personal lives, because, you know, there's a lot of trust involved there. And, you know, you and I, we both serve. And I think it just goes to show, you know, how much trust we have in other veterans and other service members, and just how much we do trust each other with this type of stuff. Because, you know, you telling your story, it doesn't matter, you know, what went on in your background. You know, it is a personal thing, and you're entrusting me and the listeners of the show with that story. And to me, that's a big thing. So I don't take that lightly either. So, you know, for the listeners who maybe aren't familiar with you and your background, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, you said it really good. I started from the bottom, just not as a private, but academically challenged. And from the National Guard, National Guard was nasty girls. That was a lower area of the military. So I started from junior college. I went, you know, I did, everything was from the bottom. I had to work my ass up in multiple ways. And this is a book, A Soldier Against All Odds, that I wrote recently. And it's a story of inspiration and hope for anybody, really, military or not military, who might be in a funk and might need some help and some funny stuff, some really ridiculous stuff, bizarre, everything. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I like how you got a little bit of humor in there, but it's real stuff that happened. It's the stuff happened to you, and working your way up from the bottom, I think is just a testament to, like, your resiliency and your attitude towards probably life in general. I would imagine just saying, like, okay, I'm at the bottom now. I'm looking up at where I want to be, and I'm just going to keep climbing until I get to that point. And I know officers who begin their careers as enlisted soldiers seem to be, in my book anyways, unicorns, because I think I only knew like one or two officers during my time in the military who started off as enlisted and then ended up as officers. But the officers who were the ones who I found related the best to the enlisted soldiers were the ones who made that transition. So talk to me about that transition, how that took place for you.
Okay. I just looked at, you know, going into the military as a way out of, I couldn't go to college. So I didn't look at it as a career. I said, easy paycheck, go get some experiences, go over, maybe do something, drink some beer and things like that. Well, whatever. I just looked at it as a way to get a paycheck, and maybe, you know, that was the option. And, I really didn't think about becoming an officer until I got out of basic training. And to me, that was pretty much hell on earth for me. That was in 1983. I was a field artillery soldier. And it was, if you've seen the movie Full Metal Jacket, that is exactly what the damn thing was about. I mean, the barracks, the language, everything, Full Metal Jacket, if you, that basic training scenario was there. And I was one of the worst privates. I really was. I had a learning problem from diagnosed at age 7. And it felt like to me, I was drinking water through a damn fire hose, and I just wouldn't get it. And so that's where it started. And then when I had a lot of crazy things that occurred in basic training. It's in my book. And when I got out of basic training, I thought, I felt that I could probably do anything to me.
Well, that's an interesting thing too, because a lot of times people go into basic training not having done anything with their lives up to that point. I mean, a lot of them 17, 18 years old, right? There's not really a whole lot of time that you had the opportunity to do stuff with their lives at that point. But by the time you get out, you have this confidence that, like, I can tackle the world now. I could do just about anything. If I went through that and I survived that and I was able to do that, I could do just about anything. So yeah, that does make sense. So that after that, you kind of set your sights on the officer group.
Well, it was a slower transition. Yes, I had a lot of confidence, and that the first time I got laid was after basic training, because I had so much confidence. So it was manifested in different ways. So so I started slowly to think I might want to become an officer. Yeah, because, you know, all the things that enlisted people do is, oh, you're working with all these minor little details and things. And I looked at the pay chart and I saw E6 with 12 years in is making as much as a young buck second Louis, a lieutenant. And I said, well, how do I become that? So I started looking at the paycheck and I saw officers coming out of their, well, they come out of their office, they're officers, and they come and tell soldiers or their first sergeants, or they come tell their platoon sergeants what to do. And I said, well, shit, you know, I'm starting to think, you know, shit flows downhill. It's better to get up the hill. And then, you know, I thought, I was thinking of that too. There was multiple things I was thinking about as this transition occurred. It's probably with an after basic training, after about a year or two looking at this stuff. So yeah, that's kind of started. That's how my thought process were at the time. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I probably speak for a lot of enlisted soldiers. I was enlisted myself, and we oftentimes will look at that and say, you know, we're doing a whole lot of work down here, and the pay is not quite as good. How do I get up to that level, right? It definitely makes sense. I think a lot of people probably can relate to that. Now, with all the jobs and the different positions that you've had in the military, I got to believe that you face a lot of stress and trauma throughout the experience. Right? You deployed several times. How did you manage to cope with all of that? That stress and everything that you dealt with during your time in the uniform?
Well, for the most part, it was very, very exciting to me and very valuable to me. And I enjoyed a lot of it, especially the overseas deployments. Now, in the book, I've got it detailed out. I was a lieutenant colonel. I was sort of a senior person when I went through the most stress I've ever had in my entire life. And that wasn't even in a combat zone. That was in South Korea. And I went under a federal investigation for espionage against the U.S. government. And a lot of people wonder, you know, I've got this detailed out. What did you do to piss these people off? I didn't do anything. Well, I walked a different walk. Certain things, I probably pissed some people off saying I didn't want to do this and I didn't want to do that. And I look back in hindsight, and it was just, I don't know if you've heard of gaslighting or throwing somebody under the bus or a backstab. Those are different terms you could say. They threw some hazy accusations at me, and I was way long in my career. I had a rack. I had a lot of medals. And this crap happens sometimes in the military. It happens, like maybe you have some friends, maybe a group of buddies, that and someone says something behind your back that's wrong, that's false. That take that to the 10th degree, and it's a federal investigation that's totally bullshit. That's what happened to me that gave me a sucker punch. And bottom line is, I'm innocent. I was innocent back then. I'm innocent now. But I went from there. That was South Korea. And so that was the biggest sucker punch I've had. And then, of course, I have been deployed to Afghanistan and things like that. But I wanted to get that a little bit out of the way, because in the book, I've been arrested multiple times. I tell you what's my fault. But I'm going to tell you what's not my fault. And that's why I wanted to be so honest in this memoir, is to show you what I've done right, which is a lot, mostly, and then what I've done wrong. But show you all the crazy things that have happened that would make this book interesting for you.
Well, and it is interesting too, because I think, you know, coming from an enlisted guy's perspective, sometimes you look up at the officers and they either are the total like dirtbag officers who doesn't know anything about anything, or they're the officers who are squared away. They look like they got everything under control. But then every once in a while, you get somebody like yourself who you clearly can see that they're getting thrown under the bus or something that maybe they did, maybe they didn't do. We don't know, but in your case, something that you didn't do, and you're taking all this heat for something that was a non-issue, was nothing that even needed to be brought up. And it's like, you know, what the hell's going on with this thing? What happened, right?
Exactly. So what happens sometimes, a lot of people don't, well, I'm trying to think of that soldier that's looking up to me as a senior person. What happens a lot of times, being thrown under the bus as a senior person, even if you have the Medal of Honor, it doesn't matter. There's a procedure. I didn't know this until it happened to me, but if there's a group of sergeants that don't like a command sergeant major, or there's a group of sergeants or civilians, even civilians that are working for the government that don't like a particular officer, what they can do is use, you know, you've heard of these hotlines. There's a hotline for everything. There's probably a hotline for burning down a car. I mean, there's hotlines everywhere. So there was a subversion and espionage against the U.S. government hotline. So if there's somebody, and there's sexual assault hotlines, there's various hotlines. So you can use these things to screw with someone, to really screw with someone. It's called an investigation, right? So, they threw some hazy shit out there through a hotline, said I was selling secrets or passing on information from the U.S. Government to foreign nationals, which was total bullshit. Criminal investigation, CID, Criminal Investigation Division got involved. Military intelligence got involved. It was considered a secret, but, you know, these things have a tendency to leak out. My security clearance was challenged. Nothing at the bottom line, at the end of the day, nothing happened. I've got it detailed out, and there's a lot of stuff there. So you might read the Army Times and someone's being investigated, this or that, but it was total. But what it does is it hurts that person, and it hurts that person's family. Yeah. And even if it's, I know I didn't do it. I know I didn't do it. If they had anything on me, they would. But, that was a big punch. And that was the most difficult chapter to go through. Of course, I did go to Afghanistan. That was just I was trained for war. I wasn't trained for a federal investigation of false bullshit. So,
right, exactly. The military does a great job training soldiers to be soldiers and do your job in a combat environment and that type of thing. That's administrative type thing as far as the investigation goes and all that. You get very little training on that type of thing, if any at all, right? And as a matter of fact, they may prefer it if you have very little training to no training, because that probably makes their job a whole lot easier to just close the case and move on when you're not informed of, you know, what you're able to do or not do in those situations. So, tell me about, you said that was probably the most stressful thing going through that. How did you cope with that and overcome all of that through that time?
That is a tough one to answer. That was very difficult. At the time, I had to hold on to my family, hold on to my wife and my daughter. And, you know, they were on my side. I had some officers that were on my side. They wanted to be a little bit distanced from it because it was just such a wicked accusation. There's other things that I can't get involved in right now. You can read the book that were also. So when that didn't work, there was other things that they threw out there. I'm not prepared to talk about that at this point. But with that particular accusation of subversion and espionage against the U.S. government, I eventually got transferred to another place in South Korea from that one an office to another office. That helped a lot. But your family, your friends, whoever you call your friends, you need to hold on to them. if you, I did, for the first time in my life as a lieutenant colonel, I did seek professional counseling, which I was kind of embarrassed to do because I can handle anything. I'm strong, I'm Army, and why do I need help with a counselor? But I did that. And you know, you physical fitness, whatever it takes. And it's really, that was the hardest part. I had been through a lot of things in the military, but that was the biggest punch, which was not even war. It was not war. It was in South Korea. And so, that's how I handled it. Yeah.
Yeah. And you touched on something. I don't even know if you realize that you touched on this, but, just that mindset of I'm a soldier, I can handle anything, I can deal with this. That's the mindset that an awful lot of soldiers have, and not just soldiers, but Marines, sailors, airmen, everyone has that type of attitude. And that's, I think, a lot of what prevents people from going to get the help that they need. But now we have a leader, a lieutenant colonel in the Army, who's gone and thought out the counseling. And I know for me, when you see somebody lead from the front that way and say, like, hey, you know what? Something's not right. I need to go get this fixed. It's like, okay, now that almost is like freeing. Like, it gives me permission to go and do the same thing if I'm seeing something's wrong with myself. And it's refreshing to hear people who do that, especially when they're still in uniform, to go and get the help that they need, right? Because, yeah, a lot of times people are concerned, you know, am I going to lose my security clearance? Am I going to lose my job? Am I going to get transferred to do something else? You know, all those types of things people are concerned about. But at the end of the day, if you're not operating at your 100% peak potential, you're not as effective of a soldier as you could be. And I think everybody wants the most effective soldiers out there, right? So let's get the help that we need and get this this problem nipped in the bud before it becomes an even bigger issue, right?
Yes. I mean, I went into an anxiety attack. I've never had an anxiety attack in my life when this stupid crap was going on. I started shaking and my mind was racing and I went in there and they put me on EKG and I'd never had an anxiety attack until this. I mean, so yeah. And so I just said, well, I gotta find some help. My your family is going to be really good help and support, but then also you might want to try other things. And it might just be a counselor. It could be other ways of trying to find an answer to whatever your problem is. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a good point too, because you're right. I mean, counseling may not be for everybody. It's certainly a great option that a lot of people, I certainly recommend people give it a shot. But you may try it and be like, I am not comfortable talking to somebody about all this, but there's other things out there. And I think that's important too, is to just keep going and keep trying that next thing until you find what works for you. Just keep going.
Yeah, keep going.
Persevere through this problem, right?
Yeah. And one of the things that helped me, I had that one big punch we talked about with the federal investigation. And then my dad died and then I was going to go to Afghanistan. So I was probably so that investigation held on to my head, like, you may have something. But then I come back out of Korea. Damn, my dad dies. That I'm in hell right there. I'm in a double hell. I've got this. And then, oh, by the way, while your dad's dying, we're sending you to Afghanistan. Afghanistan, okay, I can handle that. But now I've got to leave. I was in a mental state. So I don't know. I did go to the counselor again. And I jumped on an elliptical. It was by accident I was doing this. And I jumped on this elliptical that goes left, right, left, right. You're just working out. And then I started to see visions. I started to see photographs. And then I started to cry. And I started to laugh. And I started to get angry. And I worked out. I thought I was going to break that elliptical because all these emotions were. And I felt that I was being relieved that way. That's just one. I just did that by accident. And again, like, you might want to experiment. And so that really helped me, because before I went to Afghanistan, I was right at Korea, investigation, stupid stuff, dad dying, that's hell. And then now I'm going to Afghanistan. I'm going to leave my support system, which is my family. And it's like, and I'm in hell. I don't even know if I can go to Afghanistan with my mental condition like this. Afghanistan, I can take that. I can handle that. But it was my mental condition from those two events that was like, oh man, what do I do now? You want me to lead troops like my in combat with my mental state? I was like this. It was a tough time. I almost thought about going to mental health to say, and I believe mental health would have proved me to give me a waiver, a medical waiver to get out of Afghanistan because of my mental condition at that time. And I did think about that, and I did, and they said they would approve it, but I just, then I talked to my uncle. My uncle says, what would your dad think about you doing that? And he would, of course, that would be no, and that would not be a good thing. And so I decided, oh, shit. And my commander says, man, you know, so I said, oh, shit. So I said, man, I'll just go to Afghanistan. I'm going to tell the troops that my dad died, and they'll probably, and they did understand it. But that was a very tough time. And Afghanistan was like, again, it was a minor aggravation of getting away from my support network to go lead troops when my mental condition was not that well. But that's kind of the big punch right there. Yeah.
So while you're in Afghanistan, you're still dealing with this mental state that you're in, right? Mental condition, right?
Yes, it was that way. I mean, my first sergeant was saying, sir, did you remember what you just said, or do you remember what to do? I was like, and I knew that I was just hanging on. What IEDs and improvised explosive devices and suicide bombers and stuff like that. Okay. I know we trained on this stuff, but just keeping up to trying to figure out, sir, are you okay? And it wasn't Afghanistan. My mind was going back, before that. And so it wasn't that. It was just other things that were already on my mind. So yes, it was a tough time. It was a tough time. And I have good soldiers. They supported me. They knew my father died. I didn't tell them about the bullshit of Korea and the investigation, but because it took me a while to even figure how to express that part. But they just said, oh, his dad died. And I said, yeah. But there was more than much more than my dad dying. So no, but you take care of your left, you take care of your right. They take care of you. My soldiers take care. They took care of me. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's basically just having that good support network of those good soldiers who were able to kind of take care of you while you're there. Now, did you find any particular thing while you were over there that helped you kind of clear your mind and kind of mm-hmm. get through that? Or was it just something that you were kind of suffering with throughout the duration of it?
And again, yeah. So like in combat, there's a whole lot of boredom. There's a whole lot of nothing going on. And then there's just a little bit of stuff going on. So what I did during the day, and I would work out and I would go alone and process. I was in Shindan Air Base, and I'd walk around the air base with these two weights and just process the memories and things of the past. And it was a processing mechanism. So I would do that a lot. So that helped me out. We had Skype at that time. It was and I would talk to the family members back home, keep connected with them always with the internet and Skype. So those were two of the things that I did when I was in Afghanistan with that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it seems to me like exercise is a big component for your well-being, not just your physical well-being, but your mental well-being as well. You're talking about, just going to town on that elliptical and just going, and then walking around with those weights. And that's a huge thing too. I've noticed myself when I skip, if I just don't work out for a week or something, or even just a few days, I notice at the end of that time period, like I just feel like I am dragging. Like I'm not in a great place after that. Then after, getting back into a gym or running or whatever it is that I'm doing, getting some physical energy out and moving, I feel a little bit better, and it starts to turn into the right direction. Still have issues that I deal with, but it makes it easier to kind of cope with some of that stuff. It just, sometimes you don't even want to get out of bed, but sometimes you just have to kick your ass out of bed and force yourself, right?
Oh yeah. And, you know, just walking the dogs. So, if you walk with a dog, you have dog therapy, and then you have walking. That's a good deal. And then you have, maybe you have some nature around you, or some park or whatever. You know, it could be fly fishing. It could be bicycling. It could be various things, that whatever's fun and that you enjoy to do, to get out there and then just do that. And there's no silver bullet for it. You know, you might want to experiment around, and don't worry about what everybody thinks. Don't worry about that. Just go. You're doing it for your own health and your own well-being and your family's well-being. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And when you're not 100% there, if you're, you know, for the listeners, if you're a father or a mother, or, you know, even just spouses, husband or wife, whatever, if you're not 100%, then you're not being 100% there for your family, who needs you to be there, because they're going to have their own bad day from time to time. They're going to need someone to lean on and confide in and all that kind of stuff. And if you can't handle anyone else's bullshit at that point, if you can't handle it, you know, what good are you doing to them? And so you need to be able to take care of yourself and get yourself right mentally. And that means doing things like you just mentioned. Go get outside, go walk the dogs, go fishing, go get some energy out, go do something physical, you know, if that's what's going to help you. But sometimes people see some of those things as being selfish. Oh, I can't take, you know, a few hours to myself to go fishing or whatever. I can't do that. That's just too selfish. Well, okay, fine. But you're also not taking any time for yourself to do anything. And now you're less of, you know, less effective as a father or a husband or a mother, whatever, whatever your title happens to be, you're less effective. So, like, make the time, put it in the calendar and say, Saturday morning, I'm getting up early, I'm going fishing, like, or I'm going to the gym, or I'm going for a run. You don't have enough time in your day, wake up an hour earlier and just make the time, you know, get that time in for yourself, so that way you can be present for other people, right?
Oh yeah. And in my book that I wrote about, there are so many ways around a situation, whatever situation you might be in. There are certain ways, if you think about it, that you can get around it. There are certain ways. Well, I don't like, let's just say in this conversation, oh, I don't like to fish. I don't like to ride a bike. Well, I don't like to run. There's so many things out there. We haven't said the right one. So there's a lot of things you could possibly try. And if you don't like it, just try it. My mom says, you don't like this food, just try it. And then you can decide later. That's kind of what
it is. It is. It's just like that. I've had situations with my own kids where they looked at some food that came out and they're like, oh, I'm not so sure about this. And it's like, well, just give it a try. And they try it and they're like, well, I can't believe it. I actually like this. This is good. And it, you know, it's something, you know, a little bit funky, a little bit, you know, obscure, whatever. And they try it and they're like, oh, good. You know? So yeah, good new thing to try. I mean, I did that myself with artwork and painting. I didn't pick up a paintbrush since I was, you know, in elementary school or whatever. I never really painted. And then someone was talking to me about some of the benefits that they felt, you know, for their own PTSD and stuff. And I was like, well, what do I got to lose? You know, maybe I spend a couple bucks on some art supplies and I try it out and it sucks and I hate it. I just toss it. And then who cares? But I tried it. And I found out that I actually enjoyed it. And I found myself just kind of getting lost in it, and all the worries that were in my head were just gone while I was focused on that thing. So yeah, exactly to your point, exactly, just try it and see what happens. And that way you can improve yourself while you know, being there for other people as well, right?
Oh yeah. Later next week, I'm in the veterans I've got the veterans benefits and things. And they're sponsoring a ski, not just skiing, but winter activities in Aspen, Colorado. And it's a winter sports clinic. So this is for veterans that like to do things in the mountains. mountains and snow skiing, snowmobiling or whatever, or skiing for me, I like skiing, fly fishing, whatever. But then the Veterans Administration also has a summer clinic for folks who like to do things in the summer in San Diego, which is kayaking, biking, surfing, blah, blah. They're trying to give you a taste. And then so they've got all these activities. This is just with the VA. So the Veterans Administration, I know a lot of people don't like it. But I mean, there's good VAs, there's bad VAs, just like there's good car mechanics and good, you know, bad, good ones and bad ones. But they're looking at these things, creative arts. And when you get a certain age, over the age of 55, they've got the Golden Age Games, where that's where I'm at now. So they say, well, you know, this, and it's a, they consider this medical therapy to go out and do stuff. And they put it in your medical chart. Oh, he went out skiing and he went down the hill. Okay. They type it up. That's it. So that's how far at least the VA thinks about what we're just talking about.
Yeah. Exactly. And it does make a lot of sense because it does have a lot of benefits. And I think if people just got off their asses, got outside, did something, you may not know what that thing is for you yet, but go try something. You don't like that first thing? Cool. Now you're one step closer to finding the next thing. Move on to the next thing and just keep trying things until you figure it out. And that's really, I think, the only way that you're going to get to the point where you are starting to see some sort of healing. You can go to all the counseling and all the therapy in the world that you want, but I think ultimately a lot of it is going to be tied to your physical energy as well. Get some of that energy out and just go out and do something. I mean, it could be gardening for crying out loud. It could be anything. Just get out there and do something, right?
Do something,
So I want to talk about your book. I know you mentioned a few times throughout this episode so far, but I want to talk about that as far as what the readers can expect from the book and really who the target audience is for the book, who's going to read it and what they can get out of it.
They're going to get out of it inspiration and hope in any phase of their life. So they're going to look at someone who came from the bottom in various different ways. You might think you're from the bottom. I was from the bottom. And then I worked myself up and I had lots of problems. So it's an inspiration, like a just climbing the ladder and just going through all the arrests, and I know everyone has their skeletons. I put my skeletons out there for you guys to say, well, I might not be as bad as, but so you'll see how I went through these and how we were talking about different ways around situations that you get involved in. It's everything, girlfriend problems to shooting up cars and, you know, getting arrested, and getting in trouble in the Army, getting ass chewings in the Army. It goes on. And you can look at it and think, well, I'm not as bad as that guy, maybe. And if he can do it, maybe I can do it. That's kind of what I'm thinking, that maybe some inspiration and hope.
Yeah. And I think a huge part of it and part of the reason why this podcast exists is just because there are people out there who feel like they're all alone. They're the only ones who've got these problems going on in their lives and nobody else has problems. Everyone else is showing their A game out on social media and everything like that. And that's all you ever see is the A game out there. And so you get in the back of your head, that's like, well, I can't compare to that. Well, of course you can't, because you're only seeing the A game. No one's out there posting their worst days or their, you know, your mediocre days. It's like, oh yeah, I got like half the stuff on my to-do list done today. Yeah, that's great. Like, no one's posting that, right? So of course you're not going to live up to that, because that's not real life. That's just random snippets out of someone's life that just happens to be great stuff. And so when you see somebody like this, somebody who rose up to the rank of lieutenant colonel and had some setbacks along the way, had some skeletons in his closet, like, okay, well, you know, if he could do that, all right, well, maybe there's some hope for me out there yet too, you know, I can do that too, right?
Exactly. I mean, I don't think when I started to write this book, and how many colonels and generals want to tell you all their crap, all the shit they went through? What I'm saying is, like, I went over here and I conquered half of Iraq and we did it with all blah, 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 blah. But I'm coming from you to a point of view where I didn't want to have to start from scratch because I wanted to find a memoir that was sort of similar where I didn't have to start from scratch, but we couldn't find that. So we had to start from scratch. And I put everything I could into this book. It damn near killed me. It was a hell of a task to do. I had help. but reading and writing, I'm an author, right? So I wrote a book, but there are a lot of typos, but it's a good book. But I failed English. I failed the first grade. I failed. That is my worst subject. And I'm talking to you about a damn book. So what I'm saying is I went against the odds with this damn book. So I think a lot of people will come away with this. I've got an audio book, which is there as well with my own voice here. So, but that's kind of what I kind of got off track.
No, that's okay. I kind of like how you're going with that though, because I know when I wrote my book, I was thinking to myself that my English teachers from high school, whichever one of them are still alive, if they've ever found out that I wrote a book, it would probably kill them because I was such a terrible English student that they'd be like, how did he figure out how to write a book? Like string all of those words together and come up with something that actually sounds pretty good. Like, how did he do that? And he couldn't do that while he was sitting in my classroom. Where did I mess up?
Well, so, yeah, I mean, how did you do that? I mean, that question with me was with everyone. How did you get that? So that was, everybody was asking that same question. How did you do that? I said, well, you know what? I keep having to answer this and I keep thinking about these questions everyone's asking me. I'll just write a book to answer the questions of how I did it. And so that's why I went to this book, because there were so many people saying, how in the hell did someone like you, a dumbass like you, do all this stuff? I say, I don't know. I really don't know. I just kept on trying. My dad taught me to keep trying and just keep on working at it. So this is why. Now if they say, well, how did you do it? Well, here's the book. Oh, I don't want to read the book. So no, that's kind of how that works. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and that persistence and refusing to quit on things is how people get stuff done, because everybody has setbacks. Everybody has failures. I mean, Michael Jordan didn't even make his high school basketball team. I mean, let's look at that as a setback. Imagine if he just says, oh, you know what? Basketball must not be for me. You know, one of the greatest players to ever play just wouldn't have played basketball. Like, come on. You know, like that type of stuff happens to everybody, but you just keep going and you keep pushing through and you figure it out. Gives you that resilience, and that it's really a muscle that you have to learn how to flex, that you have to work it out. Because if you let yourself quit and let yourself just sit back, that muscle starts to atrophy and you don't get to use it. You're going to end up in a point where you just won't keep trying. You'll try something once and you'll be like, you know what? It didn't work out. I'm not going to keep trying. And then that just turns into a situation where you just won't do anything that you're not already comfortable with. And then you're not going to grow at all from that point. Right. So yeah, keep pushing through. And I think that's a good message coming out of this book, is that just resilience. Resilience through and get it done, get the job done, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, a lot of people like to talk about that term, you know what, I'm up shit creek, or I'm neck deep in shit. Well, you know, that's a term we use you know, to think that we're in a bad situation. But with me, I've literally been in shit. I've almost drowned in it at night in South Korea. I've got it detailed in my book of how that happened. But no, you know, in the military, we have to land nav or land navigation, finding your way around with a map and a compass. It's kind of a soldier skill. And there was this badge I wanted to have. And so it took me 3 times, but I failed twice. I got it on the third. But on the first try, I fell into a cesspool. A pool. It was in near the DMZ, the demilitarized zone of South Korea. And I was walking along a rice paddy and I knew it was there. I could smell it. And so I tried to stay away, but I slipped and I fell into it, and I was going under, and I was in neck, and I was literally neck deep. And a lot of people like to think of themselves, but I was there and I thought I was going to drown. I thought I was going to die. You know, my feeling was, you know, I've never had a wife. I've never had children. I don't want to die this way, because I mean, my last name is Pike, and they're going to call, I'm going to be pooping Pike dies in Korea, Pike dies poop and poop and South. And I was thinking of that. I was thinking, I was into my late 20s, and, I eventually caterpillared up out of the shit hole onto the, and I low crawled out. Once I got out of the, saved myself from drowning or going into the, so it was a quicksand type of material. I got out, laid on my back, looked up at the stars and said, why does this shit happen to me? And I was just like, oh my God, what do I do now? I didn't know. I didn't want anybody. And then I had another problem after I got out of the poop, out of the shithole. I thought, well, how do I not let anybody know about this? Because I don't want to be known as Poop and Pike or the, I was a lieutenant land nabbing at night and I fell into shit. This is going to be, I mean, they're going to remember this forever. And so I got to hide it. I got to save my face. And that's what my next problem was after I got out of that. So I started walking toward a light. At the time, I didn't know if I was walking toward heaven or hell, but it happened to be a Korean family, a farmer's family out there on the rice field. I walked toward that family and I said, I got to somehow find a way to get out as far as save my face and clean up. I knocked on the door and I said, annyeonghaseyo, annyeonghaseyo. It's a Korean, annyeonghaseyo. I learned a little bit of Korean over there, but mostly it was hand waving. And they looked at me and they said, agu, agu, agu. That means ooh, 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 and agu, agu. And then they told me, well, they motioned me to strip naked. I stripped naked in front of a total stranger, female there, and I gave her all my stuff, and they hand motioned to me that they would bring it back to me the next morning. They'd wash it up. And so I walked back to camp about a mile or so, naked, butt naked, barefoot naked, and I had my rifle up. And so I walked back to camp naked, and I cleaned up, and everybody else was out there looking for points, so I saved my face, and for the most part, no one really knew about that. So there was two, when I fell into shit, there was two things went right. Number one, I got out of the shit. And number two, I found some help to save my face and save my embarrassment because I didn't want to be called Poop and Pike. So I prevented those two things. Now I failed on that event, but I eventually got it. It took me two other tries to do that. So no, I mean, we all talk about being in a bad place, but I was in a really bad place there.
I mean, you were literally caught with your pants down.
Oh, yeah. And so, yes. So this book is it has a series of events of bam, 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 bam. And so you'll see those and you'll think, oh, wow, this dumbass can do this. I can get out of bed and do something. Yeah. So.
Right. Yeah. And yeah. So, I mean, these stories, I think these personal stories make it the story that much better. Because you get to see the insight into the reality of the situation. Like, what were you thinking? Okay, you climbed out of the shit. Now it's like, what's next? How do I save face here? I mean, lieutenants don't exactly have the best reputation when it comes to land nav. So, you know, that was probably the first thing I would be thinking of. It's like, oh man, I'm not doing this very, very good justice here. But then having yourself covered in shit, that probably doesn't help either.
Mm-hmm. Oh no, but, it's just very embarrassing. Very, I couldn't even talk about it for years. And then it just like, again, like a little things that are traumatic to you. Sometimes you just can't express it. I mean, it's a great story. And, it just took me a while to be able to articulate that damn thing. Like many other things.
Right. And so you get people out there, they're going to be reading this book and they're going to see the reality of these situations. It's not always pretty. It's a lot of times ugly, and you just roll with the punches and you just keep pushing forward. The situation was unexpected. You did not leave that day thinking to yourself, you're going to be covered in shit. How do I deal with this? Right. But you adapted and you figured out some solution to the problem and you moved on and you figured it out. So, you know, I think it's definitely a great story. I do I don't want to give too much more away from the book, too many stories from the book. I do want people to go out and get a copy of it.
And there's audio as well. It's on Amazon.
Okay. I was just going to say, let people know where they can go get a copy of the book. But so Amazon is probably the best place, right?
Yeah.
And I will have a link to that in the show notes for the listeners. And is there anywhere else that people can go to get in touch with you, learn a little bit more about your background?
Yeah, jasonpike.org, J-A-S-O-N, jasonpike, P-I-K-E.org. You're going to see my website. And on the front of the website, you'll see I've been into shit, literally, and I got out. And so that's kind of the story of the book, really. So, yeah, jasonpike.org and Amazon. Or you could just type A Soldier Against All Odds in your browser. You're going to find out there. So, yeah, that's the best way to find out about me. And, what I'm really needing is reviews and reviews. I like to see my company. I was number two. I was number two Army biography, according to Amazon. It was Tuesday. So now I dropped down to 14, but I like keeping on trying. I want to get number one. And so if you can give me a review, that'll just help one more little thing. And it's free. You don't have to read the book. You don't have to hear the book. Just, hey, I heard about this dude on the show, and it sounds pretty cool. That's all. Give me a 5-star. It helps me walk up that little ladder that I'm always trying to climb up. So that's where you can go. Yeah.
Yeah. I know what that's like. The first, a few weeks after my book came out, I think I was on Amazon constantly just clicking that refresh button to seeing if there's new reviews and new
crazy
or what the star rating is. I probably wasted so much time doing that just checking that out, but I probably could have spent more time getting people to write the reviews, so that way I wouldn't have to keep doing that. But anyways, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you today, learning a little bit about your background and your story. For the listeners, the book again is A Soldier Against All Odds. It's on Amazon. Go take a look at that book, and definitely leave a review, 5-star review for the book. Thank you, Jason, again for taking the time to come on.
Thank you. All the money goes to the vets. I'm donating everything to the vets, wherever you buy or whatever. And I'm very honored to be on the show. I feel very special to be on your show. I want you to know that.
Excellent. Well, thanks again for taking the time to join us.
All right. Take care.
Looking forward to see how many more reviews you end up with.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to support the show, please check out Scott's book, Surviving Sun, on Amazon. All of the sales from that book go directly back into this podcast and work to help veterans in need. You can also follow the Drive On Podcast on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, and wherever you listen to podcasts.